Welcome to the Hustle Up podcast, the podcast that shares the unique stories of startups, side hustles, and the self-employed. I'm your host, Josh Burrell. In this episode, I'm joined by Julia Smith, who can only be described as a multifaceted entrepreneur. She runs a marketing agency, two online stores, and a business marketing coaching business called From 9 to Thrive. Hi, Julia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Good. You're my first international guest. Woo! Julia's dialing in from Ibiza, and it's nice and sunny there today, which is all good.
It is, yes.
So I usually like to start off by just asking what life was like growing up for you. So what was family like? Where did you grow up? And what were some of your interests? Were you always into starting businesses?
So I grew up in Sicily in Italy. And then I moved to England when I was about seven years old. And grew up in the north of England. And I was interested in entrepreneurship from a young age. My grandparents are quite entrepreneurial. They own a lot of shops and houses that they rent out. My parents did have a business for a little while, but they are quite corporate through and through. So they very much pushed me down the corporate route. You know, at university, they were like, oh, study law. So I started studying law, but found it extremely boring, so I dropped out and did psychology instead. But then after that, it was very much like, oh, go and get a good job. So I worked at like a really big corporate, but I didn't really like it. And growing up, I had always tried to start businesses, but I just never been able to turn them into anything because I didn't really have anyone around me that I could turn to, and social media wasn't as big as it is now to be able to learn in the way that people can. So I didn't really know like how to progress. So I had like millions of things that I kind of half started but never finished. I have always, like, looking back, I have always wanted to be my own boss for sure, do my own thing.
Cool. So you did law to start with and then you went on to psychology. Was that both at University of Sheffield? Because I remember we obviously knew a few of the same people. How did you find Sheffield?
I loved Sheffield. I thought it was great. I think it's such a good city for students because it's small enough to feel like you know everyone, but big enough to not feel like you're on a tiny campus.
Definitely.
And yeah, I was very lucky to be able to swap courses and not have to wait a year because I'd already studied a lot of what they were teaching in the first semester. So yeah, I absolutely loved university there. A lot of my good friends that I still have now are from there. So yeah, I had a great time.
Good stuff. And how did you find the psychology course prepared you for that step into the corporate world? Like, what was your experience applying for jobs and what was the first role you went into?
So, I mean, I studied psychology more because I loved like understanding people and the mind and that, and I still do now. I still read so much about it now. In terms of preparing me, I didn't end up going into anything to do with psychology at the time because I wanted to be a psychologist, but you had to study for like an extra year or two. And I was like, I've studied for 21 years or however long now. I want a break now.
Yeah.
So then I went into, what was my first job? Well, I wanted to go traveling. So I went traveling for 6 months after uni with a friend from uni. And so I just worked in like cafes and bars, like trying to make some money. And then when I came back, I got a job. So I basically only ever worked in one corporate business. Like I worked for Unilever and I got like my first job there was counting desks. So really good fun. Like five times a day, I had to go around the office and count how many people were sat at their desks because they were doing an office move. So that was really fun. And then I just ended up staying there for like 6-7 years and just moving into different roles and then moving to London and working in their marketing department. And then I left, and started off by myself.
Then was there like a light bulb moment? Was there a specific moment where you thought this corporate world is just not for me and I want to start my own thing? Or was it kind of a gradual process?
It was definitely a gradual process, but there's definitely one memory that I have, which is I had a lovely boss at one stage and he was like, it's like your end of year review, like it's pay rise season time, like let's go for a walk and I'll tell you what your pay rise. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So excited. Nice. Like we went for a little walk. He handed me this envelope. I opened it and it was like my pay rise for the year equated to like £50 a month more. And I looked at it and I was like, okay. And he was like, no, you should be really pleased. Like, this is a really great pay rise. And I thought, is this is this a joke? I was like, I've worked all this time to get this smaller pay rise. Like, I hated having somebody else dictate how much I earn and not being able to control how much money I earn, regardless of how much effort I put in. And yeah. I remember just looking at that and thinking, I don't want to get another pay rise slip ever again. Like, this is ridiculous. I found it so embarrassing. And so that was definitely like a pivotal moment that I remember, but it was something that took me like a year or two to actually turn into something that I wanted to do, like to actually leave.
Yeah. And what was the first thing you did in terms of branching out on your own and starting your own business? And what are some of the things you're working on at the moment?
So I actually like just quit my job with no plan. I just basically ended up hating it towards the end. It was quite like a toxic environment.
Yeah.
And so I just quit. So for the first 2 months, I didn't actually do anything other than watch Netflix and feel
not
a bit
a bad thing to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But then I was a bit like, what have I done? I've just left like a well-paying job at a really good company to do nothing. And I was like living in London, obviously paying expensive rent. I was like, okay, not a great scenario. So what I ended up doing was I applied for over 200 jobs like in different types of marketing roles. And I didn't get an invite to an interview for a single one. And I was like, okay.
It's really demoralizing.
I was like, I'm clearly not as good at marketing as I thought it was. So then I instead ended up going on LinkedIn and I started messaging like founders of businesses on LinkedIn directly and being like, hi, do you need anyone to do your marketing? And I really quickly got some clients from there. So I got like my first four clients from doing that and then just freelanced doing marketing. But I realized very quickly that I hated freelancing because I had to always be in their office. I was like their main port of call and it all revolved around me. And I was like, I quit my job to have more freedom of time, more freedom of like location. And I didn't have that. Like I was going
it's like
to
the opposite. Then.
Yeah. And because I was like, I couldn't say no, I'd taken on too many clients. So I ended up working like 18 hour days. I worked on Saturdays as well. And in the end, I either quit the clients or they got rid of me. So then I ended up back to zero. And then I was like, okay, this isn't good. So then I decided, okay, what if I started an agency? Then I can be the middle person and I can have a team that does the work and then I can take on as many clients as I want. And then most importantly for me, I didn't have to work from their offices because I wanted to be able to work from home or from abroad. That was really important to me. So I started, and to be fair, the approach of how I got those businesses was the same as an agency. I just marketed myself as an agency rather than as a freelancer.
Right.
But the process was exactly the same. So that was how I then ended up starting my marketing agency. And I started it with my brother at the time because he was working in recruitment and hated it. So I was like, come on, work with me. And it did. Yeah, it did go pretty well, to be honest. And then we very randomly then started a diamond company, having no experience within diamonds, but we'd gone to meet a diamond dealer in Hatton Garden to originally do marketing for him.
Yeah.
Because he had developed this platform where you could build websites for, like, if you were a jeweler and you're like a traditional jeweler that had a store that didn't really understand the internet, he built like a almost like a WordPress, but for diamond shops where you could list your diamonds to sell. And he wanted us to help them promoting their diamonds. And we came away from the meeting like, rather than helping all these people that we don't know promote their diamonds, why don't we just work with him and create our own diamond company? And we do the marketing and he supplies the diamonds because he's like one of the biggest suppliers of diamonds in the UK. So then we went to him with that idea and he was like, yeah, I like this idea. And good. So then we just randomly ended up doing that, which was very bizarre.
Did you get any free jewelry out of that?
Not free jewelry, but you know, from him, we can get like wholesale prices of jewelry. So yeah, that's how we kind of ended up starting that business. Then I started at a similar time to quitting my job. I started an Instagram account originally it was for like the gym. So I was just documenting my time in the gym. And then eventually it turned into like fashion content and then it turned into travel. And so now I've got a page where prior to COVID, would do a lot of traveling, work with a lot of hotels, tourism boards, etc., and still work now with like fashion brands. So it's something I do really enjoy. Yeah, so that's something else that I kind of started and built up. I didn't build that up to turn it into a business. I just enjoyed documenting like my gym stories at the time. And then it just fell into like, I'm not someone that I would say is like super into fashion or like hot on fashion trends, but just ended up falling into doing that. And now I've become more conscious of like what to wear from doing that kind of work.
Okay.
So yeah, that's really good fun. And then I started last year my coaching business, because basically I'd obviously quit my job, had a marketing agency, built it up to be quite successful, and then had lots of people that were starting out, like coming to me for advice. I had a lot of friends, a lot of acquaintances, like, oh, can you give me some advice? Give me some advice. And I thought, rather than helping them like for 10 minutes here or there, if I turn this into a business and become an actual coach, then I can dedicate more time to helping people. And so I launched that last year. And originally I was working with people that were still in a 9-to-5, wanting to transition into being their own boss. But I actually found that it was quite difficult to coach people in that situation. So instead I transitioned to working with mainly kind of social media managers and coaches who have already started out in business, but aren't getting to the levels that they want to get to. Maybe they're signing low ticket clients, or they've only got one client or two clients. And instead now I work with them, helping them scale to like the income levels that they're wanting, which I really enjoy. I find it super rewarding and really good fun. And then I'll just talk about this final thing. So last year I then randomly bought an electric bike shop.
Oh, wow.
I haven't ridden an electric bike before. But to give a tiny bit of context, I'd always wanted to own a Shopify store. And so I'd started two Shopify stores myself previously that had failed like drastically. But I was like, I'm determined to still own one somehow. And so what I ended up doing instead is I ended up buying a shop off someone that was selling it, because I was like, at least this way, this person's proven that it works. They've already gotten customers. They've already made money. I'm just buying it off them and improving it. And so I bought that late last year. And then I've kind of completely revamped what it looks like, the products that we sell, the marketing, etc. So that's something else that I run as well. So just a few things.
That's brilliant. And I know that obviously electric bikes and electric scooters are getting really, really popular at the moment. So I'm sure that'll thrive. In terms of like buying the shop, is there like a place where people sell their shops?
Yes.
I've not really heard of that.
Yeah. So there's, I can't actually remember the name of the website that I bought it from now, but if you Google like shop, like online stores for sale, or like Shopify stores for sale, there are tons of websites where you can buy them from. And what I'd give as advice is make sure you can verify their data of how much money they're making each month, and also like use your own common sense to guess why they're selling the shop, because you don't want to be buying a shop that's failing and they're pretending that they're selling it for other reasons. So yeah. I feel like you have to read between the lines. So I spent a lot of time like trying to understand that. The site that I bought it from, I can't remember the name, but they do verify the data. So when they say it's made this amount per month, that data has been verified on Shopify. So they can't amend, they can't fake that data.
Have you got your own electric bike yet, or are you planning to get one at some point?
No. I prefer like normal bicycles.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, even here in Ibiza, there's lots of people that have electric bikes, but it's not really for me. But I thought, hey, like you were saying, it's a really popular market. Like there's more demand than there are bikes available.
Okay.
So it's a good industry to go into, which is why I did.
Oh, definitely. So going back to the coaching business, did you have to do any extra studying or get any qualifications for that? Or was it just something that you did a lot of your own personal research on to get started?
Yeah. So I didn't do a specific coaching qualification because I'm focused predominantly on business. So I'm basically teaching people like the business strategies that I've used, the marketing strategies that I've used, sales strategies that I've used. I have invested in lots of coaches, courses, programs to develop my knowledge even more than what I already was before. But that's kind of what I focus on helping people with predominantly, rather than like other areas like life coaching. Or I do a bit of mindset, obviously, but it's mainly on the strategies around business.
Okay. And it all sounds really successful. In terms of the things that haven't been so successful in the past, are there any sort of pitfalls or anything you'd kind of highlight to people to try and avoid? You mentioned some of the Shopify businesses that didn't go so well.
Yeah, I've had so many things not work out. For all the ones I've just shared now, I've probably got double that didn't work out. I'd say like do your research before going into an area. And I know I'm biased as a coach, but I really do think that learning from someone else that has already done it helps you succeed, not only increase the chances of succeeding, but also succeeding faster. So for example, when I started my marketing agency, I had no coach, no mentor, no nothing. I did make it work, but it took me so long. Well, it felt like so long. It was like a year. I was working really, really, really hard and I had no idea what I was doing. Then when I became a coach, I was like, okay, this is a totally new industry. I could again spend a year trying to figure it out by myself, or I could just hire a coach that I know has already done it and they can teach me everything. And I hired a coach, and within 30 days of her coaching me, I'd signed four clients at four times the price of what I was originally wanting to charge. And so I was like, had I not done that, I still probably would be nowhere near where I am now with my coaching business. And so I would really recommend, it doesn't have to be a coach, but even like a course or a program or something, just to learn the foundations. Because what I always try to stress to people is that like time is your most precious asset. Yeah. So yes, you might be able to figure something out by yourself, but think of the months and hours it's going to take you to learn it by yourself. And often you don't know what you don't know, whereas like a coach or a course do. So you can just learn it a million times faster and then increase your chances of success, because also you avoid their pitfalls. You know, you don't have to make the same mistakes that they did. You can avoid them. So that's probably my main advice if you're venturing into a new area. Even if you think you know the area well, you know, just because you've studied something or worked in an area doesn't mean that you can then turn that into a profitable business.
Of course, yeah. So you mentioned sort of coaches and mentors a little bit so far. Are there any in particular that you'd recommend? Is there anyone out there that's really stood out to you and been like, yeah, that is the person that I would recommend to anyone?
Well, I think it depends on what it is that you're wanting to go into. There's different coaches for different things. I mean, I'm happy to mention my coach that I have now that I'm working with for a year. She's called Amy from Social Cactus Coaching. So she works with coaches. She also works with like service-based entrepreneurs, and she's incredible. Like I decided to work with her because I really look for social proof whenever I work with someone. So she had insane amounts of testimonials and results that she'd gained for people. And I remember thinking, I want to be one of her testimonials one day. And then recently she shared like my story on her Instagram, and I was like, yay, I've made it into her testimonials box. But I think it depends, because now I'm looking at different types of areas to invest in. So for example, I'm looking to ramp up one of my online courses, and there's a lady called Hayley Burkhead who teaches you how to develop passive income stream from online courses. So I think depending on what it is that you want to do, I'd say it's probably best to go to niche down.
Yeah.
So if you want to learn how to become a YouTuber, there's a lady that's an incredible YouTube mentor that has a really great course. If you wanted to do Instagram, there's different people. So I'd say like, look more into the exact area that you want to upskill in rather than someone that's like an absolute generalist and everything.
Okay. You mentioned niche then. I've seen a couple of your posts talking about kind of identifying a niche. What is a niche for people listening who don't know, and how does someone home in on what their niche should be?
So a niche is basically a specific set of people that you want to appeal to with your business. And something that people tend to make the mistake of thinking a niche is a really big group of people. So the other day I shared some content around people think a niche is a small business or a female entrepreneur. And it's like, well, if you own a small business, you could own a diamond business, an e-bike store, a coaching company, a marketing agency. They're all different businesses. Yeah. They all have very different problems. So if you're trying to appeal to all of them, you will actually appeal to none of them, because none of them will look at your content or look at what you're sharing and promoting and think, oh, that speaks to me. Whereas if you niche to just working with, you know, e-commerce stores, or you niche with working with marketing agencies, then the content you'd create and the offers that you'd provide would be more specific to that exact group of people. And then they'd see your content and your offers and be like, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm a marketing agency, or I'm an e-commerce store. What you're sharing is relevant to me. Let me get in touch. And so, when I started my marketing agency, I had no niche, and it was really hard to get clients, because the first thing people would say is like, can you show me some examples of previous work you've done in this area? And I'd be like, yeah, I don't have any. Whereas now I've got like a few different niches. So if someone wants to see an example, I've got tons and tons and tons of examples to show them. It makes it so much easier to sell them in. Because if you can say, look at these 10 people that were just like you that I've got these results for, it's going to make it easy for them to be like, okay, sure. And for you to be like, I've worked with someone in this industry. I know it's not like your industry, but it's still kind of similar. People don't really, that doesn't reassure them. And I always give the kind of common example of, if you've got a problem with your brain, you wouldn't go to a GP, you'd go to a brain surgeon, because you know that that person's going to give you something more specific than the GP, who likely doesn't know enough. So it's about trying to be as specific as possible. And in terms of choosing your niche, I'd say focus on what you love rather than what you think you're good at, because ultimately to succeed in business, you know, it takes time, and sometimes it doesn't go as quickly as you think, and sometimes things don't go to plan. And if you don't like the niche, if you find it boring or annoying or whatever, it'll be so much easier to give up than if you really like it and you're really passionate about it. So I'd say choosing something that you like. You can always learn and upskill in the area if you don't necessarily know it that well, but if you like it, I'd say that's what you should focus on in terms of choosing it, if that makes sense.
That's brilliant. So you've obviously made the switch from the corporate world to working for yourself. What would you say is the best part about working for yourself, and what has been the hardest part about working for yourself?
I'd say the best part is definitely just like freedom in every sense. So freedom of where I live, you know, I've been able to move from London to Ibiza, freedom of when I work. So I can choose, you know, I can take a day off, I can take an afternoon off, freedom. And also in terms of income. So I no longer have to wait a year to earn £50 more a month. Like I can just, you know, buy a new business or add a new offer or find a new client and immediately increase my income. And I'm now in control of it rather than having like my boss be in control of it. So freedom of everything was always my like goal with wanting to leave the corporate world. And I'd say the hardest part is, I guess then, especially in certain stages, is like developing a work-life balance. Because whereas in the corporate world, I very easily shut my laptop at 5 and at the weekend and never reopened it because I was like, it really doesn't matter. Whereas when you work for yourself, it's like, if I don't do the work or I don't pass this on to this person or, you know, make these things happen, nothing does happen. So you feel a bit more responsible of like opening your laptop, you know, in the evenings or the weekends or whatever to get things done. And also in the beginning, obviously you've gone from working in a world where no matter what you did, you always got paid at the end of the month, unless you really screwed up, to then having to create your own income every single month, which in the beginning can be hard, and it can be hard to get that consistent income coming in as well. And then it does kind of take away that feeling of security and comfort of like, I know I'm getting paid no matter what, to what's going to come in this month. You know, will I get enough? Will I get more? Will I get less? And it can, you know, it makes you behave a little bit differently. So I'd say that's quite a hard transition. But I personally find that exciting and like a challenge because I'm like, okay, where will this money come from this month? Like, what will I do?
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, oh my God, like I've got no money. Like, what am I going to do? You know, and panicking. I think the mindset shift as well from the corporate world to working for yourself is quite hard because you have to believe in yourself so much more and trust yourself so much more because it's up to you to go out there and make more money. It's not up to anybody else. So I've done like so much mindset work since leaving my job to try and stay like positive and in a success mindset all the time because it doesn't come naturally.
I like the sound of that. And on sort of a surface level, how would you recommend people to have this positive mindset? What are some of the ways that someone can do that quite easily?
So I'd say, well, I guess listening to podcasts or reading books in, you know, in the areas of positivity or mindset or like, you know, becoming successful, or like making money, they're really helpful in terms of deep diving into tips. What I found helpful was trying to understand like my limiting beliefs. So what were my views around money? What were my views around myself or my views around success? And then understanding what was maybe making me feel scared or holding me back and then working to overcome them, usually either through working with a coach or doing affirmations, doing meditations, doing hypnosis, journaling. Like I find scripting to be a really, I'd say that's my favorite exercise to put me in a good mindset, where you just write out on a piece of paper a day in your future, like a diary entry, but you write it out imagining everything that you want to be true.
Okay.
So it could be like one of mine is at the end of this year, I'm gonna be in the Maldives celebrating the new year, X, Y, Z will have happened. And you write it as though it's true. And the more you do it, because your mind doesn't know what's real and what's not, your mind is like, okay, cool. So that's what's happening this year. And then in turn, that makes your behavior and your actions follow suit to make sure that that vision happens. So that's like my favorite type of exercise to do.
That sounds really sensible. I might start giving that a try. Like, it would be lovely to be in the Maldives for New Year's. So yeah, I might have to make it on mine, you know, too.
It's nicer than waking up and going, oh no, all these problems I've got today, all these issues I've got to get through today. Like, it puts you in a nicer headspace and it makes you think, right, okay, what do I have to do today in order to get to that goal at the end of the year? So I always always tell my clients to try and do that every day. The more you do it, the more you're cementing it in your head as well. Like if you do it once, it's not going to change your life. But if you're doing it every single day, it will start to make a difference.
Awesome. Move on to the pandemic. Obviously, we're in 2021. We're recording this one in May 2021. And we're still kind of in a sense of lockdown in the UK. You've obviously moved to Ibiza in the pandemic. What was it like moving there? How did it affect the business? And I know you had some challenges getting some of your stuff over there. So I think it'd be good to touch on how it was moving out to Ibiza from the UK.
Yeah, it was really hard to move out here. So at the start of the pandemic in March 2020, I actually lost all of my clients because I was working in the hospitality space, hospitality and retail.
Sorry to hear that.
I lost every single one. Had a meltdown for a while and then I got over it and then kind of completely switched niche into a niche. And actually the reason why I moved to Ibiza is because during the pandemic, my boyfriend, who was a TV producer, lost his job couldn't go back into TV for a long time. So I said, come on, work with me instead at a marketing agency.
Yeah.
So now he works in it as well. And then because we were then able to be location dependent completely, because before he'd have to be obviously like based in London for different TV shows, we were like, why don't we move to Ibiza? Because we both love it. We go every year.
Okay.
And then we moved, but it was really tricky because we moved in January when there was an extreme lockdown in London, extreme lockdown in Spain. And obviously Brexit had just happened as well, yeah. to top it off. And so obviously because of Brexit, you can't now come to Spain, well, for more than 3 months.
Right.
And currently at the time of this recording, you can't come in unless you've applied for a residency.
Okay.
Or have a residency. So we had applied for a residency, but to cut a very long story short, on the day that we were meant to fly out to Ibiza, our COVID test was going to expire that day. And it was the last day that Spain were allowing non-residents that had a residency in progress like myself to come into Spain.
Yeah.
So I had to get into Spain that day. Otherwise, I'd probably still be in England right now. And I woke up on that day and our flight had been cancelled because there was a snowstorm in Barcelona.
Oh, God.
And there were no other flights to Ibiza that day. So I was like, okay, had a bit of a meltdown again. And then was like, okay, how do I get to Spain? I was like, I can drive. I'm going to like literally do anything at all I have to get to Spain today. And so in the end, I managed to find a flight to Mallorca instead that was going that evening. So I flew to Mallorca that evening, made it into Spain. It was quite hard because even at the airports, they were telling us, you can't go, like you're English, like you can't fly, blah, blah, blah. But I just was like, I'm going. Yeah. I have to go. I'm sorry. Just let me on this plane. And so eventually managed to make it here on the day that it closed. Because I've got a lot of friends that were meant to be moving to Spain that are still stuck in England now. So I feel very grateful that I was able to make it that day.
It's meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though it felt like it wasn't, it felt like the universe was against me and it was like, stay in England.
Yeah. How's your Spanish? Is it strong?
Terrible. Well, the thing is, I can speak Italian.
Okay.
So I understand Spanish very well, but I haven't carved out the amount of time that I should have done to learn Spanish. So, I mean, when someone talks to me, I understand what they're saying, but when it comes to responding, I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, okay.
I can't see the beach behind you, but it's not all just like partying and super clubs, is it? There's a lot of sort of nice nature out there in Ibiza, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I think Ibiza has a really bad reputation of being a party island. And obviously it does have big super clubs and you can come here and go to clubs and see big DJs perform, but that's such a small part of the island and the rest of it is really tranquil, really it's a very spiritual island. A lot of people here are into nature. A lot of hippies are here. It's very relaxed and chilled, especially in the winter season because there's no tourists, no clubs are open, no bars are open. So yeah, I spend a lot of my time, less so now because it's quite warm, but in the winter just going on hikes, seeing different like beaches, caves, parts of the island. And in the summer, obviously, yeah, it appeals to two audiences, the audience that want to go to the big clubs and the audiences that just want a relaxing holiday because the beaches here are absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And in terms of the working side of things, are you taking on clients in Ibiza now, or are you still working internationally with UK clients?
So I don't actually have any Ibiza clients yet. We do work with clients like in the UK, US, Australia and Canada, both actually my marketing agency and my coaching business, but haven't taken anyone on here, mainly because I don't know what the tax implications are.
Okay.
I didn't want to take anyone on like until I understood that. So yeah, everyone's still predominantly like in the UK or the US at the moment.
Okay. And your business side of things is still registered UK then?
Yeah. Everything is in the UK.
One of the things that a lot of people I speak to on this podcast gripe about is the tax side of things and having to pay this chunk of money every month or every year. I don't really know how it works, but how have you found running your own business and having to pay the tax man?
I actually prefer it to the corporate world because in the corporate world, you have no control over how much tax you pay. And I remember I would be so annoyed getting a payslip and seeing that like a third of my income had gone to tax. I was like, cool. Whereas when you're in your own business, you know, if you have a good accountant, you can expense a lot of things. You can, you know, I mean, I put so much through my business. I put like car hire, phone, like my phone, my laptop, like so many things through that actually I pay probably less tax now because of that than I used to do in my corporate job. So I actually think it's a million times better. And another reason why I wouldn't go back to the corporate world.
Good stuff. What are your future plans for the businesses, or are there any exclusive announcements or new businesses or things you're working on at the moment that you want to promote?
So I am planning to launch another business later this year. I know I should probably stop, but you know, can't help myself. That one's going to be a publishing business, like purely around publishing of nonfiction books. And then in terms of the business that I have now, like my aim with my marketing agency is to kind of really grow it this year, but scale back my involvement in it. So I've obviously been at the helm of it for over 3 years now, and I really just want to take a step back and have somebody else run it. So I'm in the process of getting a managing director in to take over. And then with my coaching business, I'm going to be launching later this year quite a few different products, mainly different courses and offers for people to do at different levels. At the moment, I only offer one-to-one coaching or my group program for kind of newbie entrepreneurs, but there's nothing, they're quite high ticket.
Okay.
So I wanted to create courses and content that was more accessible to people, especially if they just want to learn one specific area of what I teach. So I've kind of picked four of those areas that I always get requests for and turning them into content so that I can just appeal to more people. So yeah, that's what will be coming out later this year.
Can you say what the four areas are, or is that exclusive?
So one of them is around creating content that converts. So I always harp on about how much content is, I know it sounds mean, but really boring on Instagram and like won't attract clients to make inquiries.
Yeah.
So I'm creating a program around content that converts. I'm doing one around lead generation. So I always get asked about leads and how to generate leads. So all the different ways I generate leads. One is for kind of newbie social media managers. So this is people that literally are like, I want to be a social media manager and haven't done anything else, or have started an Instagram page and have like 10 followers and don't know what else to do. So it's teaching them like the basics of getting a social media business off the ground.
Yeah.
And then another one is around Facebook ads. So I get a lot of questions about Facebook ads, but this is predominantly for, obviously there's tons of Facebook ads courses out there. This is predominantly for people that run Facebook ads for their clients and want to either learn how to do the skill or improve the skill so that they can start charging more, because it's something that you can charge quite a lot for, because it's quite a like sought after skill set, and it's not something that's easy to do like without really learning how to do it. So there is actually another one that I'm doing, but those are the four I'll mention for now.
Okay.
In terms of content. Yeah.
Okay. And what advice would you give to someone who is looking to escape their corporate job?
Just do it. Do it. Honestly, it's by far the best thing I have ever done. And I've helped so many people leave their 9-to-5s as well. And I'd say like the one thing I know that holds people back is fear. It's fear of the unknown. It's fear of not knowing like how to make money. It's fear of like, will I be able to look after myself? People don't regret what they do. They regret what they don't do.
Yeah.
So you don't want to get to the end of your career and be like, oh, I really should have just tried working for myself. I always say like worst case scenario, you quit your job. You try being an entrepreneur. It doesn't work. You just get another job. Like it's not like the world's ending. It's just, but at least you've given yourself that chance to try and make something of yourself.
Yeah.
So I would just say literally go for it. Like if you have that thought and that desire, it's not going to go away. And the more you push it away, the more it's going to bother you and make you anxious and stressed. So I'd say just go for it. But also be wary that it takes a lot longer than you think to start making money. So unless you start a side hustle whilst you're in a 9-to-5, which I know a lot of people do, but also some people just don't have the mental capacity to do it whilst they're in a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
So give yourself like, I'd say 3-4 months to get going and to try and make some income. And like I said, like if you want to fast track it, learn from someone else, buy a course, buy a book, buy something that will teach you the steps of what you need to do to get going.
Yeah, I think those are all sensible suggestions. And so for anyone out there, just take the leap and see how it goes. You've mentioned that you outsource certain things and you have a team as well now. Is there anyone in your team, or do you want to sort of name them and shout them out for the hard work they do?
I mean, there's a lot of people that I would shout out. I mean, I'd say in my coaching business, my VA Ella is excellent. She's, helps so much. Like I couldn't really run it without her. I've just hired a new social media manager as well for my coaching business, which I'm excited for. It's going to help with the content creation element for it. And in my marketing agency, we have, for all the services that we do, we've got different teams. So I've got like an SEO team, a Facebook ads team, a Google ads team. And then we've got a lovely account manager called Amy who looks after most of our clients.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who. I mean, yeah, but they're probably like the core people. There's others as well. But what I always give advice for as well in terms of outsourcing is like outsource before you're ready.
Yeah.
People always think, oh, I need a bit more money and then I'll outsource. And it's like, that's just a vicious circle. Like it's better. No one ever thinks, okay, now I'm ready to outsource. You just think, again, the whole thing of saving time, like time is most valuable. If that person, even if you spend X amount of money on that person, if that in the long run saves you so much time because you can then focus on other things, it'll actually end up bringing you more money in the long run.
Yeah.
So like anytime I start any business, I hire people immediately, even when I'm making nothing.
Okay.
Because I know that it'll help me grow faster.
That's an interesting tip. And it sounds like you've got quite a international team then working for you and sort of helping things run along.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in England. I do have an English like SEO guy who's been stuck in, well, not stuck. Well, it has been stuck in New Zealand since the start of COVID, bless him.
So that's worst places.
Yeah, that's why I was like, it's not really, oh, woe is me.
Yeah.
He's been stuck in New Zealand for, yeah, almost, well, over a year now. And then the rest of them are across Europe.
Okay.
But yeah, it's quite nice to have people all over the, and then yeah, obviously with my actual coaching clients, a lot of them are in the US, which is quite nice. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we've talked a lot about the business side of things. So I wanted to also briefly talk about your Instagram account that you mentioned earlier. So in terms of Instagram or social media, blogging, what are the sort of biggest changes you've seen since you started out?
The biggest changes I've seen is in the quality of content. So back in the day, you could get away with growing with really poor quality images, poor content in general, whereas now the standards are very high. Obviously, as the iPhone upgrades, you know, the picture quality gets better, people edit photos less. And also, I think the way to win now is with video.
Yeah.
So whether that's Reels or IGTVs, that, you know, the people that I've seen grow the quickest have been doing that consistently. Whereas obviously back when I started, that wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
Like video wasn't that important. I don't even think we had stories back then when I started. So yeah, I'd say video is definitely hugely important now.
And do you think the Instagram blogger community is as strong as when you started? Or do you feel like people are just kind of going it alone now?
No, I feel like, in the fashion space that I'm in, like it is quite friendly.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the girls are really lovely. They're all very supportive. They're all very kind. Considering we're all technically competitors to each other, it doesn't ever really feel that way. Like people are lovely and helpful. I remember when I first started out, I had so much help and support from people because I didn't know what I was doing. So I was just asking them for help and guidance. And I never came across anyone that was rude or horrible.
Yeah.
Even same in the coaching space, to be honest, like a lot of coaches are really helpful, really supportive, really kind. I don't know if I've just been lucky in the sense of coming across nice people, but I find it to be quite a nice space.
That's good to hear. And I was going to ask, in terms of future guests for this podcast, potentially, who would you say is doing things differently on Instagram in sort of the fashion space or the sort of lifestyle blogging type Instagram pages?
That's a good question. Who is doing things differently? Well, I'm actually launching my podcast at some point. I've recorded quite a lot of episodes, and I did record an episode with a friend who is brilliant. And if you'd want to speak to her, I'd recommend it. She's called India Moon. I followed her since she started. We started at a similar time, but she's like massively, massively grown. And the one piece of advice she gave on my podcast that I thought was really insightful was like, I know a lot of people say it, but it was like, just be yourself. So at first she would create content that was just what she thought people would want to see or what was trending fashion or whatever. And now she's like, I'm just going to wear whatever the hell I want to wear, whether people like it or not. And as a result, she's grown so much faster. And like a lot of what she wears isn't stuff that you would expect someone like that to wear, but she pulls it off. It looks great. And as a result, she's gained more of an audience. So I really respected that because I think it can be very easy to just be like, oh, let me do what everyone else is doing because that works, rather than being like, okay, but why am I unique? Like, what do I bring to the table? How can I stand out? And that's the best way to win, because people want to follow people that are different, not people that are identical to everybody else.
Brilliant. No, that sounds good. And check out Julia's podcast when that launches. I'll keep an eye out for it myself.
Thank you.
Related to that, do you have any recommendations for books, films, TV shows or podcasts that can be business related or anything that you've been enjoying recently?
In terms of podcasts, I love The Mindset Mentor. He's got really good like bite-sized tips on mindset hacks. I also absolutely love Manifestation Babe. Like I first came across her almost 2 years ago and she is just incredible in terms of teaching manifestation. Books or kind of speaker-wise, recently I've started reading and following a guy called Joe Dispenza. Yeah, he is incredible, like super. He's like a researcher of neuroscience and quantum physics and basically explains the science behind manifesting and how like the exercise I was saying earlier of like visualizing your future, how that actually impacts your like biochemistry and then changes who you are as a person the more you do it.
Okay.
So he's super fascinating. I don't actually watch any shows around business, but I have just finished watching Money Heist, which I thought was incredible.
Love it. I can't wait for the next series, but I know that COVID's delaying things. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, It's so good. Also, it's been good to learn Spanish from.
Yeah, that and Narcos are literally I just want to learn Spanish so I can watch these programs with no subtitles.
Yeah, I know. I feel like the main words that I pick up are like their swear words. Yeah. I'm like, I feel like I know all the swear words now, yeah. But not so much the rest of their language.
Yeah, and Narcos is always quite violent. So it's words for like bullets and like kill.
Yeah, I feel like it would be questionable if you were just using those kind of words if you came to Spain and were like, hey, I'm going to use what I've learned.
How do you unwind outside of work? So you've mentioned doing hikes when it's not too hot. What else do you do?
I'm not actually the best person at chilling out, if I can be completely honest.
Okay.
I really struggle to like completely chill. My favorite thing to do here now that it's summer is like going to like a nice beach club, drinking some rosé, people watching,
nice.
Having like nice meals, or even just seeing friends. I feel like lockdown has showed me like how much I need my friends to switch off.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm always thinking about work. Whereas with my friends, I don't think about work. I don't look at my phone. I just stay like present with them. And I am actually, now that it's getting a bit warmer here, going to start to learn to free dive. I wanted to learn for about 10 years, but never gotten around to it.
Okay.
So there's a place in my town that does it. So I'm going to be starting that because I feel like that'd be a nice way to switch off in the evenings or the weekends, just to go and dive. So
It's quite easy to switch off if you're underwater, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's so quiet. I love it. So still.
That sounds like fun. And yeah, Ibiza sounds like it's got a lot to do. It's one of the places that I've wanted to go since I was probably about 17, purely because of the music back then and the partying. But now knowing that it does have something for a more mature gentleman such as myself a bit later on in life. But yeah, I probably still would try and party at least once on the island.
Yeah, exactly. That's a nice thing about it. You could come for a week and have a chilled time and then just have one evening out. That's what I started to do in the last few years that I came before I lived here. I was like, I want a relaxing time, but I'll have one night out,
yeah.
You know, because the nights out here are like no other. They're insane.
I look forward
to it. They're expensive, but they're very incredible. Yeah, you should definitely go.
Brilliant. And you said that Maldives is on the cards for New Year's. It's going to happen. Where else are you going to travel to once places open up again?
So I really want to go to Costa Rica. I was meant to go for my 30th earlier this year, but didn't go because of COVID. So I really want to get over there and Miami potentially as well. So they're kind of on my hit list, but probably won't go until later this year because I feel like the summer in Ibiza will be a great summer. So I don't want to move from here.
Yeah.
But then towards the winter, maybe having like a bit of a winter summer holiday and heading over to those places.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I'm sure people are going to want to let loose as soon as Ibiza's open and you can get out there. I'm sure that all those people you mentioned that are looking to move over to Ibiza will probably be there in a heartbeat. So
exactly. Yeah. So I feel like I want to make the most of it being, you know, open again for the first time in a while and people being able to come over and enjoy it and then go off in winter when it gets a bit cooler.
You mentioned Shopify and sort of selling online.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on digital products? You obviously sell courses and you sell online things and use a lot of online platforms to sell some of the things you're doing. What would you say to someone who's like, why would I buy something digital? I want something physical. I want to meet someone in person and have a course or a book in my hands.
Well, books don't tend to be as in depth. Like having read books and now being on the other side of like people that make books and courses, like the book is the introduction to the course. So the book is like the high level overview of what the course is about. And to be honest, like most entrepreneurs that have courses, if you wanted to meet them face to face, are going to cost you like $100,000, or you could go to one of their like live events, which again will cost you probably tens of thousands of pounds. So it's more economic to learn from a course than it is face to face, especially if you're in the UK and the entrepreneur you live is in America or Australia, like quite difficult to reach them. So I think it's just an easier way to learn. Cause I think obviously you go to school and university and you learn certain skill sets, but then you leave and there's a lot of things you don't learn. And I just feel like the online space is a much easier, quicker way to learn the things you actually want to know to move forward. I'm forever buying courses. I'm literally always doing a course just because I'm always wanting to upskill in different areas.
Yeah.
And I prefer doing that again, because I used to rely on YouTube, but then I learned that YouTube is just a sales funnel where they teach you again, very high level, what to do, but not how to do it.
Yeah.
And then people at the end upsell their programs and courses. So you will never learn everything that you need to know from YouTube. So I feel like the answer is online courses.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with sort of not even YouTube videos that I want to watch, but sometimes the ads that pop up, and if I don't skip it quick enough, it's like, learn how to do this in 30 days. And you watch this 2-minute advert And then it's like, give me more money and I'll tell you how. Yeah.
Exactly. No one will ever tell you the how for free. That's what you pay them for.
Yeah.
But that's what the books and the YouTube videos and the Instagram stories and stuff are all about, is the what. And then it intrigues you enough to go, oh, okay, now how do I do this? And then you pay them to find out how.
Smart.
Yeah.
So coming towards the end of my questions, your coaching business, your marketing business, why should people choose to go with you? What's your sort of USP, or what do you offer that you don't think anyone else does as well as you do?
Well, within my marketing agency now, we've kind of turned from the traditional retainer model to moving to something called the pay-per-lead model. And the reason we did that is because, you know, retainers are quite hard to sell, especially if you're charging a lot like we were, whereas a pay-per-lead model is people are just paying for the leads that they're getting. So it's a much more attractive offer to them, but it's also still lucrative for me. So I work mainly with kind of B2C businesses. At the time of this recording, we're working with like mortgage companies, life insurance companies, financial advisors, helping them generate leads, and all they're paying for is a lead. So the difference between that and a retainer was, with the retainer, you've got to pay for everything like the advertising, the website fees, the setup costs, blah, blah, blah. Here, they're just paying for a lead.
Okay.
So it makes it a bit more of an interesting offer to them and easier to sell and get more clients. So that's kind of how we are niching ourselves in that sense. And then with my coaching business, I'd say what I've found is, you know, I became a coach after running several businesses by myself. I wanted to learn first how to run a business and then teach other people how to do it. I teach people mainly that are service-based entrepreneurs, even though I've got two product-based businesses, but I just find it easy to teach service-based.
Yeah.
And people I tend to end up working with are like coaches or social media managers, digital marketers, etc. And I've developed two successful businesses in those areas. So I find it quite easy to teach them. And not only that, but obviously I worked in marketing for 7 years. So I know a lot about marketing that, you know, maybe not every other coach in the world does. So I think combining all of those things together means I can help get people very good results because I know exactly what to do. I've done it myself. So I'm just teaching them what I did.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of try and stand out.
Okay. Do you have any questions for me before I move towards signing out?
Who would be your absolute dream guest?
I'd love to get like a massive YouTuber on. Mm-hmm. I've got a long list of like master interviewees at the moment. So I had one on my laptop, then it broke, and then that set me back on even continuing the podcast. Yeah, it was touch and go as to whether I'd actually just jack it all in, but I've decided to continue. I bought myself a MacBook. I'm back in the game now. But yeah, probably someone doing that, someone doing property redevelopment. I'd love to speak to someone who's buying and flipping houses. I'm really interested in that personally. And
my best friend does that. I can give you her details.
Yes, would love to speak to someone doing that.
Yeah.
And then I think someone doing big things in like drop shipping or like on Depop or someone with their own business, but using one of the new platforms to do it. So yeah. I don't really know anyone in that space, but for me, I want to put like a call out and find out who I can speak to in that sort of area.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting space.
Finally, where can listeners find you and the businesses online or on social media?
So the best place to find me is on Instagram, on I Am Julia Smith. Spelt G-I-U-L-I-A, because that kind of has links to everything else from there.
Perfect. And for any final words, is there anyone you want to thank finally for helping you get to where you are today? Too many to mention.
A lot of people, yeah. I think it's also important for people, like when they're considering leaving their 9-to-5, to not be ashamed to ask others for help, because it is difficult to do everything completely by yourself. Like, and it's okay to ask for support. It's not a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it's easier to get to places when you get help from others and trying to do it by yourself.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me today, Julia.
No worries. It was nice to chat to you.
That's the end of another Hustle Up podcast. Episodes are recorded and produced by me, Josh Burrell, and music is courtesy of Hagan, spelled H-A-G-A-N, on Instagram at Hagan_UK. You can listen on all music and podcast platforms, and please like or subscribe to check out future episodes. Follow at Hustle Up Podcast on Instagram to stay up to date, and you can check out Julia's very own From 9 to Thrive podcast, which she has launched since this recording. She also has a mini course and an in-person event, which you can sign up for now.